Well, my guest tonight has been performing and composing music his whole life, playing a wide range of instruments and traversing nearly every style imaginable. He studied with guitarist Jeremy Sawkins and has become an outstanding lead guitarist himself. He now leads the band The Tango Saloon, a project which blends tango with spaghetti western, among other things, as well as co-leading the quirky tango punk jazz ensemble, the fantastic, terrific Munkle. He was a founding member of the ARIA award-winning gypsy band Monsieur Camembert and can also be seen playing around town with a number of projects. He's also scored short films, he's done theatre, circus shows and had his music used in various films and documentaries. Julian Kerwin, welcome to Now's the Time.
Thank you very much for having me.
What sparked your interest in music? You obviously have a broad interest in various music. So what influences did encourage you to continually pursue music?
I was brought up in a musical family, and I originally did some classical violin, and that obviously I eventually felt a bit restless, and I wanted to do some stuff that wasn't so connected to the page, I suppose. So got into improvisation, playing the guitar and various other instruments, and I guess just finding more and more people who are in that vein and pushing the limits, like the New York downtown scene and the European free jazz scene and all that sort of stuff, just threw all that into a melting pot, I guess, and these are the bands that came out, for me anyway, at the moment.
I would describe you as a genuine multi-instrumentalist. You play guitars, banjo, keyboards, basses, the violin, the trumpet, saxophone and oboe. Now, how could you possibly have the time to practice all these instruments and remain proficient at all of them, considering all the groups that you currently have an interest in around town?
That is a fair question, and the simple answer is I don't. A few of those instruments are instruments I played early on. I still pick up the violin from time to time. That was the first instrument I played. Obviously, I through the Tango Saloon and Munkle, I play guitars, keyboards, basses, banjo. I rarely find time for the trumpet anymore. I don't actually own a trumpet. That was something I played in primary school. So
right.
But it's made its way to a bio at some
point.
But
if someone handed you one, you could probably play it.
I don't know. It's been a while since someone's handed me one.
The group, the fantastic, terrific Munkle, how did that come about? I mean, the name is quirky enough.
The name is a little, a little over the top, I suppose.
Can you explain what the name actually means?
It was actually named first, and then we found out that it may have a meaning. That our clarinetist, Martin Kay, was, I don't know whether he was reading the dictionary or just doing it. He's got some strange interests, so he might have just been watching some documentaries or something. Apparently, to munkle is to pick something up with your feet.
Right.
But I haven't seen any other evidence for that, so I might be wrong.
You record on the Jazz Groove record label, and obviously this is your second album. Portions of this particular album I found are based in the blues, mm-hmm. but it could be hard to categorically pigeonhole this into jazz. Does that blurring of genres actually help you get more gigs for this group?
It helps, and it hinders. It's hard to have jazz people accept us, like, wholeheartedly. But on the flip side, we do play gigs at more experimental venues or supporting alternative bands rather than jazz bands. So yeah, that it's probably we've ended up on like at an advantage, I suppose, is the simple answer. Yes, and I guess at the end of the day, we don't want to be accepted completely into the jazz circle either, so that's cool for us.
It's keeping your options open, isn't it?
Yeah, yes.
And there's only good and bad music too.
Yes.
That the instrumentation lineup almost guarantees this band could be performing in a parade or a carnival. For example, there's no piano or double bass. So was that portability, that idea, something you were conscious of when you were forming the band?
I don't think we were completely conscious of that, but we have done, or at least a few of us have done, roving gigs. So I guess we tend towards that sort of sound and that kind of portability, I suppose. And yeah, it's worth noting that we rehearse sometimes with the drummer playing a diary and a pen. So that,
really?
It's very portable.
It's music that doesn't seem to take itself too seriously, hence your last answer. Certainly quirky animations on the cover prove that. Mm. How would you describe this music, if you had to describe it?
It is quite difficult. Yesterday in the Herald it was called cartoon jazz, so I guess that's a start. Words that I use, people often think I'm being negative about them, because I say quirky, I say goofy, or even jazz.
yeah.
Dinky, chamber jazz. Like, these are all, could be taken in a negative way, but I think all of that with a little bit of humour and satire and melodic is another thing I like to...
A group that might be entertaining a fiesta on, okay, somewhere on the Mediterranean.
All right, sure.
But there's also a little bit of Caribbean influence, mm-hmm, in one or two of the tracks as well, I found. Honky Donkey. Were you the writer of this one, Julian?
I am the writer of this one, yes.
Tell us about this Honky Donkey.
This one probably has the best story in terms of composition, of any composition that I've done, because I sat down to write one thing and wrote something, I think, that ended up completely different. I was thinking Raymond Scott, but a kind of bluegrass vibe. And it's got elements of that, but I think in the end it's just turned out to be something quite different. And, in terms of the name, I think it's just... In some ways programmatic. But that's the story, I guess.
I wrote here, portions of the blues, but at times could be supporting a circus clown, a Turkish belly dancer, a Rastafarian, but more likely entertaining at a Mediterranean fiesta. So there you go. That's my take on the fantastic, terrific Munkle. But I found the music, Julian, to be considerably brighter than the previous album, The Cahoots. Brighter and happier, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so.
Was that a conscious shift in direction?
I think maybe a subconscious shift. And as the artwork also highlights, because the first one, although cute and cuddly creatures...
They're in a dark corner.
They're in a dark corner, whereas now they're...
Out in the sunlight.
Colourful, yeah.
And the clear blue skies and the beautiful little fluffy clouds. What are they, by the way, these little animations? They look like potatoes or something. Is that right?
That's not what they were intended to be, but but yeah, no, that's what Mr. Shan said in the Herald yesterday.
Oh, did he?
He said that the CD sounds like what you would hear if these potato people played music. So anyway, no, I guess they're out of the very strange mind of a girl called Rhianne Potter who did the artwork for both CDs. Yeah, we just had the idea of putting funny little characters, and these were the characters that she came up with.
I've picked up an increased interest in dancing in Australia in recent years, and I thought that might have been driven partly by these television programs which are totally dedicated to dancing competitions, you see.
All right, yeah.
Now, tango obviously is part of that. What do you attribute to the increased interest in tango? Clearly you're heavily involved with it.
I guess so. I mean, it's a very strange thing for me because my involvement in tango has all been quite experimental. So, like, whereas people obviously do get up at tango saloon gigs and get up and dance at these shows, like they try their hardest to fit their dance steps to this music, I guess I don't really know, but I guess people just do like to get up and dance at the best of times, or at the worst. No, at the best of times.
Sometimes I wish they would, you know, because is it the jazz cognoscenti that is stopping them, or
there's a little bit of that. And I think on another angle, people seem to be scared off by live music, like even to the extent of sometimes leaving a venue when they see that a band's setting up. They're much more likely to dance to a DJ or something, but occasionally I suppose, you know, the live musicians can win them over. Hopefully that'll happen more often.
The Bossa Nostra, was that one of yours? Or
that is not one of mine. Samuel Golding's piece,
the tuba player on the album, and also plays the trumpet and the flute.
Not at the same time.
No, not at the same time. How did the four of you get together?
Yeah, it was a very natural process, I suppose. Sam was doing a gig. I was playing a gig with Monsieur Camembert. Sam was filling in on bass, like he was playing tuba for the bass player. And the rest of the band, for some reason or another, was running late. So we ended up doing a set of duo music. And we realized very quickly that we shared a love of the satirical, funny, weird stuff. And from there we just spent about 6 months just getting material together and jamming, for want of a better word. And the rest of the band was acquired here and there through acquaintances and that kind of thing. We originally had a different clarinetist. We didn't have Danny on drums. We just had no drummer actually to start with, and then eventually the band just came together as it currently stands. And I think that was about 5 years ago. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's the same lineup as the original first album, I should say.
Too. Yeah, yeah.
So it's sounding like a band.
Yes. Well, we're going to just keep churning these albums out.
Are you from Sydney?
Yes.
I was going to ask you about the scene here in Sydney. What do you think of the scene? Have you ever felt as though you need to move to Melbourne? Or?
Obviously we have these, musicians have these conversations and these thoughts all the time. I don't really go with that moving to Melbourne idea, because while there's definitely more music happening, I think there's a lot of it, and it sort of diminishes. I mean, I don't want to step on anyone's toes here, but some of the quality isn't as good. Quality of the gigs isn't as good. Like, you're playing in little cafe to five people, and at the end of the night they just give you a beer or something. Like, whereas at least in Sydney, if you get a gig, if you've gone to the trouble of getting a gig, you're going to do it. You're going to have a good night and actually have some people come and see it, and you're going to maybe get paid, that kind of thing. Yeah, I'm all for sort of sticking it out with Sydney. I admit there's a bit of a, there can sometimes appear to be a cultural problem audience-wise. Yeah, and it can be hard to get people out, but persevere.
Have you ever had any strange, unusual, disappointing or outstanding situations in relation to getting remunerated for a gig?
I don't want to disappoint without by just saying no.
without mentioning any names, of course.
I guess there's just been quite, you know, it's gone up and down. Every gig's a surprise, really. Like, I've done it. I've done a gig with a band at the basement. We did a gig at the basement, and it just went off. It was amazing. And then as these things obviously happen this way, they go, oh yeah, this band's great, so they book you again a month later and it fails dismally. So that's a common occurrence, obviously, that they get carried away with this, oh, this band's amazing, they pull a crowd, but then they have pulled their crowd and that's the end of it.
So it's a pity the scene's a little bit like that, isn't it?
Yeah.
Not hit and miss, but it's just not consistent.
Yeah, it's you just have to, I guess you just have to keep, you know, working at it as hard as you can and promote every gig to the hilt, for want of a better word.
Well, Julian Kerwin, thanks very much for joining me in the studio tonight.
Thanks very much for having me.